Une conversation avec Athènes, un projet de Florent Frisé et Eric Stéphanie, avec le soutien d'HD Kepler et du Radio. Une série de rencontres dans l'esprit de la bohème et des cafés néons grecs rassemble les voix de la scène artistique athénienne. A conversation with Myrto Katsimira.
Kalispera sas, erome tin halana philoxenome simela edo tin Myrto Katsimira. Efraes to me poli ke sas pou yerfate, ke ton Christo pou mas philoxeni.
Good evening, everybody. We are very pleased to host tonight Myrto Katsimira for this fourth talk, I think, at Café Neon. So before starting, before the first question, I would like to introduce Myrto by a few biography. So Myrto, you are a curator based in Athens, Greece. You hold a bachelor in media, communication and culture at the Pantheon University of Social and Political Science in Athens, and you hold also a master in curating the contemporary from the London Metropolitan University and the Whitechapel Gallery in London. We can also add that your research interest lies within the notion of collectivity and self-organization within the arts and the points of convergence between independent art initiative and institutions. So maybe, Florent, you want to ask the first question.
Hello, Myrto. I hope you are fine. So you just you recently complete a collaborative project named Deliver Art. Could you just tell us more about it?
So basically, Deliver Art was a mobile experience that was taking place in the center of Athens for 5 weeks, challenging the way that the works were presented outside the normal exhibition space of a museum or a gallery. We invited 5 artists to create a new work, or not necessarily new, but they all ended up doing a site-specific work for the delivery box. And each week we were presenting the work of one artist, three days per week. And the project was free, it was working, it worked like we received orders by text message, and we were the ones who were delivering the work wherever you were located at that point. But it was also an ephemeral experience because you weren't receiving anything, you were just experiencing the work.
As what, like protocols, can you just like maybe describe a little bit the artist proposals?
Okay, so each artist, I would say, works with different kind of artistic media.
Can you imagine?
On the first week, we presented the work of Vasilis Papagiorgiou, who is working a lot in sculpture. So his proposal was a sculptural work inside the delivery box that played with notions like what it means to how can we distinguish what is fake and what is true, and how he created a series of rings made from bronze that were casted from other fake rings. So the whole idea was how you transpose this experience that you sometimes experience in the streets in this delivery box that suddenly opens in front of you, and you encounter this thing that you're not sure if it's viable or not. So the whole idea of value changes with the delivery of this box.
It's like F as fake.
What is that?
You don't know like this film, like this Orson Welles very famous film about...
No.
Perspectives, just like artifice.
Yes, okay.
Anyway, and then what kind of proposals, or other type of proposals did you have, like in a very different media?
Yes, so the next one was Despina Haritonidi, who is also working on the sculpture. She actually transformed the whole box into an installation that you had to enter physically with your head. It was a very sensorial experience in the sense that she had installed a small fragment of a rock, of a piece of of a rock, let's say, and
concrete.
It wasn't concrete. Yeah, it was Alpha.
Alpha Blogger.
Yes. And this was held a certain kind of smell. So it was about the memory and how we, through these little fragments, we can suddenly be transposed into another memory of ours. Then we presented the work of Nina Prospadino, which was a new book that she made out of the diary of Sylvia Plath, where she actually, this is kind of her ongoing process of rewriting with her own hand the text which she's reading and she's interested in, and then actually tearing up the pages and then collaging them back together in the way that you are not able to read the text.
Did you already plan to do again this project?
Well, we haven't had the time to reflect yet about that, but it's something that we're thinking about.
But I have another question about this delivery kind of format of art. What do you mean by delivery? It's like only like the delivery of something that you buy, but also like it's delivering the experience of art.
Yes, yeah. It's delivering the experience.
So it means like basically if I'm taking like this book option, you know, it's like what do you deliver? A lecture or like a reading? How does it work?
It's again the experience of being able to see the work in a semi-public, semi-private setting outside the exhibition space. And we were actually very interested to see the perception of the different people that hold us and how they engaged with the artwork in this kind of different setting. And in some cases it was really enthusiastic, and in some cases they were a bit, how can I say, they didn't expect what was going to happen. A lot of people were expecting that they would receive something back, which was also interesting for us. And these are all questions that we need to think further.
Sounds great.
So now you're in Athens, but between 2017 and 2018, you went abroad.
Mm-hmm.
You went to New York for a special mission. Okay.
1 year of
one
my
year,
life.
1 year of your life in New York.
Yes.
I look, and you was doing an internship at MoMA.
Yeah, exactly. I was part of the. Sorry. I was part of the program that is sponsored by the Starting Arts Foundation, and it's been going on for some years now, and it gives you the chance to become a full-time intern, 12-month intern at the Museum of Modern Art in different departments every time. And I was part of the Adult and Academic Programs, which is a team within the Department of Education that coordinates the production of all the public programs addressed to adults that are happening outside museum hours, but also the daily gallery sessions that people can attend with their mission.
Ticket.
Yes, with their ticket, inside the collection or inside the temporary exhibitions with the museum educators. That's it.
No, I want. So it's something for good people.
But not necessarily. We were 12 interns, so.
But I mean, the funding by Star Wars Campus Foundation. It's something.
Yes, Greek citizens, let's say.
Greek citizens. No,
or nationality? I'm not sure.
Okay. And so you was part of this public program.
Mm-hmm.
And how was, let's say, a typical day of the public program? You say it's, you have talks inside the exhibition space or open to visitors?
To everybody, yeah.
To everybody. And you invite, it's related to exhibition or it can be something?
Not necessarily. Daily they have two different kind of sessions that can be either in the permanent collections, more often that's the case, but also in temporary exhibitions. So my job there was to coordinate and facilitate the educators that were doing the programs every day, communicate with the volunteers of the museum, also attending and attending the sessions and being there and checking if everything is fine, or coming up with ideas of programming. For example, at the end of my internship, I invited two artists from an exhibition that was on at that time, organized by the photography department, and I invited them to be the speakers, because sometimes we invite special guests. So they were in conversation with the museum educator, that's another kind of way to activate, let's say, the collection, but also the temporary exhibition space. And at the same time, we were coordinating the public programs that were related to the exhibitions. So we had almost one talk per month during a 9-month season, where we were facilitating everything that had to do with the production, from being in touch with the technicians, to being in touch with the speakers, to be on site during the program and welcoming the people, getting the ticket sales online, or managing any urgent matter that would occur. But that was also something that gave me the chance to be able to see what they were planning for the years to come. Because as you can imagine, MoMA is a very organized institution. So they had already planned in advance the next year and a bit the year after. So that was a great opportunity for me to be in the same room with senior curators and other curatorial assistants and talk about exhibitions that were not still published or running at the museum. And that was interesting.
Right. As you said, during our former conversation before meeting tonight, you were talking about the work that you did on archives also while you were at MoMA, because you have this, let's say, kind of pragmatic, very functionalist way to kind of work with this public program, but also you had the other side of your internship, who was more research oriented. So yeah. Maybe you can develop a bit more about what kind of research you were holding in New York by the time.
So, being part of that team meant that my role was quite administrative in a sense, but also that I have certain kinds of freedoms to propose things. Because as part of the public programs, I was granted the chance to do my own public program. Every department works in different ways. So, for example, the interns that were working in curatorial departments were much more into research than I was while there. So I arrived at the museum and they told me, okay, so next, by the end of your internship, you have the chance to do your own program and you're completely free to propose whatever you think might correlate with the museum and its history and everything. And I was, in the beginning, I was really stressed, because when you're given so much freedom, sometimes you don't know how to use it, and I was still familiarizing myself with the place. But then I was interested a lot in readings around institutional critique and the history of the movements of the 60s and 70s in New York. So I came across a document that is now part of the museum's archives. And I was very struck by this document because it seemed to me very relevant, and I have it here.
Yeah. Maybe you can read the first one.
I will give you the context, and I'll definitely read the first one because that was part of my interest as well. So I came across a list of demands. It's called 13 Demands, and this is how it's known to everybody. It was a list of demands sent by a group of artists on January in 1969 to the Museum of Modern Art. And this group is known nowadays as the Artist Workers Coalition, and their initiative to self-organize and to come together actually came from the response of a Greek artist that was part of an exhibition at that time at MoMA, and he disagreed with the curator.
Which Greek artist?
Takis.
Takis, of course.
And he didn't want his work to be part of the show, because actually he wasn't asked to be part of the show.
That's the reason why, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he would have other conceptual reasons, but one of his points was that the artist wasn't asked. So there started the whole conversation about what is the artist's control and ownership over his work, when actually this work is part of the museum collection. And so these artists gathered together and they sent this list of demands that I can read the first one, which I was more interested in, and then I can pass it around and you can read the rest. So the first one says, the museum should hold a public hearing during February on the topic, the museum's relationship to artists and society, which should conform to the recognized rules of procedure for public hearings. And I wanted to do something like that.
Makes sense.
But it never happened.
And if I may read another one, it's number 6, which it looks very actual. And the artists should be paid a rental fee for the exhibition of their works. So, okay, it's a question we have these days. I mean, very...
Totally. I think this is like 2019.
Yeah, and it was made in January 1969, so
yeah,
decades ago.
So when I confronted this, when I came across this document, I started researching the museum's archive and trying to understand whether this hearing ever happened. So I was going through the...
Did it happen, actually? Not really.
No, it didn't happen. It actually happened a few months later at the School of Visual Arts. And the museum, of course, there was a whole correspondence between the different departments and between the workers, the representatives of the workers and the museum. But it didn't happen. The way it happened in the Museum of in the School of Visual Arts, I guess it's not the same. It was an impact for the scene, absolutely, but it wasn't their intention, I think, the initial intention.
Yeah, it's like a theoretical statement. I mean, it's a statement.
But something that I found out a bit later while researching and I found really intriguing was that actually this group of artists became the reason why the Museum of Modern Art has one of the strongest unions for art workers nowadays, because the union started as a response to what was happening then. And this is quite relevant today, because there are a lot of museums like Guggenheim and Whitney at the moment, but they're trying to, and they're actually getting advice from the union of MoMA on how they can organize themselves within the museum.
So we can talk about the sort of effectivity of the statement. Something happened, as you say.
Something happened, but they dissolved a few years later. So around 72 or 73. And most of them became really famous artists. So there's a question mark there.
It is.
Of how the visibility or the...
Like what? How the visibility or the success as an artist just like brings you away from a collective,
How you get institutionalized by starting as...
But that's a very current and interesting question.
And so you start to work with this archive to create your own public program, but things didn't go very well. No?
Well, I have the budget to do it, but actually it was quite complicated because I wanted to address different kinds of facts, and this would end up in a workshop that would last a lot of hours and involve different kinds of organizing, and there were some constraints in terms of the budget. But other than that, it was also the timing where a lot of demonstrations were happening inside the museum.
There were some strikes by...
There were some strikes, so by the workers, because their contracts were changing. So I heard that I realized by others that my proposal was very critical.
Yeah, but did you feel any pressure from...
No, not pressure at all. No, but just...
It was maybe just not the time to release this kind of,
yes.
Hard subjects.
Perhaps not.
So it was about artist authorship, but also, and also economy and labor. So how do you still work on that, like in a specific project, or what do you do with this research-based experience?
So that's a good question, because I haven't touched this document for a while, but this is something that I would like to develop in the coming months. I'm going to be part of the Onassis Fellowship Program in the fall with Marina over there.
Next fall.
And my research proposal was about trying to research on what's happening here in Greece.
Yeah, like what, doing a kind of a transposition, a juxtaposition of...
Yeah, and actually tracing the genealogy, if at that point in 1969 things were also happening here or not. But also what is happening now and how we can address these issues here. Because this is the reality for each one of us. Yes.
And so finally you did a period program.
Yeah, I did another program.
And you did a trip also.
Yes.
And both are related.
What?
They are related.
Yes, the program,
yeah.
But I...
Could you tell us...
I will give you something first.
Yes.
It's the surprising moment.
I want to give you this, and you have to tell me what you think it is. Or what you... Yeah.
What it is.
Yeah.
Some clay from...
It's clay.
From Mexico.
No.
No.
Yes.
It's a small brick. It's a tool.
It's not a tool. But it's from Mexico.
From Mexico. Okay, it's a sidewalk. It comes from the sidewalk.
No.
No, it's like a, how do you say it? It's a pavement piece. No.
It's a, but it's interesting to hear your responses, because I tried to do that before, but we didn't have so much time in another workshop. And people had more so maybe descriptive.
Maybe we have to describe it. For the audience, like, yeah, maybe you won't touch it. Mm. So it's like this very small,
It's a very personal object.
Okay.
But my point is that I studied culture and visual culture and material culture, and I find myself when we were doing the classes and stuff like that, there's always a first kind of layer when you see something, but there's always the context and your memories and your subjectivity that affects the way that you interpret something.
Yes, of
and
course.
For me, that's a nice exercise to challenge that.
Like taking out from your pocket a very small clay brick that we don't know what it is, asking people.
So this brick came from my trip to Mexico, all the way to New York and then here. So I traveled a few kilometers. And they gave it to me at one of the spaces that I went. It's called Cooperativa Crater Invertido, and it's one of the oldest, not oldest in terms of age, but the oldest in terms of when they started, group of collectives. So this brick has no function.
No function, no authorship on it.
No.
Yeah, it's...
They made it like a fun project in one of the ovens. Actually, in Mexico, you cannot find this kind of type of paintings. It's very rare, so they made it in another city other than Mexico City. And it's the idea of this very tiny piece that usually it's part of the supporting structure and part of building that provides shelter or hideouts, for example, but it has no functional sense. So that's why I like it so much. Reminds me.
Yeah, I think it's a good metaphor maybe to talk about maybe the notion of ecosystem. Because you said, like, coming back to Athens after your trip to New York and then Mexico City, you were trying to adjust or to adapt your research, you know, on artist authorship, collectivity, the economy of work, and to see how we are able to adjust ourselves as collaborator in a in a kind of a collective work. Mm-hmm. So basically, what do you mean by we are part of an ecosystem, thinking about Athens nowadays?
I think we are part of an ecosystem anyway.
Anyway, yes, it's a bit provocative.
I think that the decisions that we make in terms of our work also affect others. And I think that we were having this discussion when talking about how we live and work and practice and how we get paid and things like that. And I was telling you that, for example, the idea of becoming a volunteer, an unpaid intern, affects the ecosystem because it generates this superficial non-value of things that we need to accept in order to be able to claim back.
But it's a due. I mean, like you said, like we need to accept to be able to claim back. It's like we do have to go through this to be able to claim back. But maybe we can just find a, you know, different perspective of ways to claim back something.
Yeah, we definitely need to find this way, and both in Mexico City and Athens, that was part of my research, trying to understand how do people work in a different kind of setting that, however, is so it's described in the same way in the art media discourse, because the last 5 or 10 years, Mexico City is described like the New Berlin, Athens is described like the New Berlin. What does that mean? So I went there and I started meeting people and discussing with them about our conditions, and they are working in a very similar way, like we do. But of course they are in a very different geographical location, they are speaking a different language, they are working in another type of state regime, let's say. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I lost my point now.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. But there in Mexico, you met Tamara Ibarra and Rachel Walensky.
Yes. There no, Rachel, I met her in New York.
You met her in New York, but she's working in Mexico.
She did some collaborations with a public library in Mexico.
And both are curators. And you decide to do an event with them, so you invite Tamara Ibarra to come to New York. And what was this conversation like today?
I met Tamara when she's one of the key people that everybody has to meet once in Mexico City, because she's been doing this research in the independent art scene for the past 10 years. And she knows everything. So basically we met and we discussed a lot about how things have changed, how what is the next step that she also expects to see from what's going on there. And she introduced me, of course, to a lot of different groups. And I met Rachel in New York. She was coordinating the program of the poetry program at St. Mark's Church, but is also a curator, and she's running a public library which is called Wendy Subway, which is another format that I found very interesting. Just a space full of books that you can go read, consult, and they do workshops with people about contemporary art books and artist books. So I decided to bring them together as part of my program to discuss the points of convergence between the independent scene and the institutions. Because in the past couple of years, the institutions seem to be more open to host.
To host independent initiatives.
Yeah. Or to feel their programming.
Sorry. I keep going.
To fill their programming with outsourcing independent
initiatives,
let's say.
So, but you're talking about like institution in Mexico City?
I think everywhere. For example, Tate Collective.
Yeah, for sure.
Doing that.
No, it's everywhere. Like, but why? Like, it could be like, an interesting question to talk about. Like, what do you think institution need to host, private artists, rent space, whatever initiatives? Because they need this kind of caution, like to get in contact with, like, the ongoing reality of art, which is not, museal, I would say, like, not. You understand what I mean?
Yeah,
like, because like,
I think that the institution, up until now, let's say, it's considered a very rigid structure that cannot change, it cannot adapt very easily. And this I could see definitely at MoMA. In order to change something, it had to pass like one year.
Yeah, the bigger it is, the harder it is to be flexible, like big
exactly.
institutions. But it also, it's a matter of the number of people working there, as we were talking about before, social rights and the legal frame of working, which sometimes it doesn't match with the freedom that we expect from arts, I guess. So
this is a way that I think they recognize that younger artists working together, or spaces that are able to experiment and think differently because they don't risk as much as they usually risk, let's say, have this flexibility. And there is growing interest, I believe, and I observe. And I think it's a good thing. But it depends on the terms of the collaboration, because I'm not sure if these initiatives are actually posted in real terms in the space.
That was the subject with Tamara Ibarra.
We talked a little about that, because Rachel, on one hand side, she has collaborated as Wendy's Subway with institutions being invited to present workshops and work there, not at MoMA, but in general. And Tamara was telling us that, for example, a big collective that was very active for the past years in Mexico was hosted at a space that was given by a gallery. And then a similar group was invited from another big museum to do their programming. So I found that as an indication of something, but also as a risk of how, as the independent projects grow, they confront the risk of being institutionalized.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a desire?
I think that we need to invent a new model of operation that is not replicating the model that's not working.
And you were telling us also the way how you work in MoMA was very comfortable or very. You are able to speak to give your.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was one of my biggest realizations when I came back. How I got more self-aware of what I wanted to do and how I could voice my thoughts and my thinking. Because at the moment, I have the chance to be part of meetings with other people of different age groups, different kinds of people, and everybody had the same
voice. Yeah, because you said that to speak out is empowering.
That
you
is a what?
Empowering.
Yes.
Yes, you said like you learned that from your experience at MoMA. Apparently, like from.
I was expected to speak out, and even if even if my thoughts or my ideas wouldn't work out.
At least you were expected to say something.
Yes.
To give your point of view.
But not in a pressing way, Just I was given the space to do that.
So from this speak out, realization or awareness somehow.
It's not that way.
Yeah. what did you do? What did you do with this? Do you want to work on something specific, related to this idea of speaking out, taking a voice?
Maybe through the research that I was telling before about our work here. This is something that I wouldn't necessarily do last year or the year before. Or even our collective collaboration, I don't think would have happened if I hadn't taken my distance for certain realities that were happening here.
I have a question, as a curator, how do you see your voice? Do you have to adjust your voice as a curator working for an institution or for a private art initiative or an artisan space structure? How the voice of the curator's voice, deals with internal, needs or wills? Yeah, I'm just thinking about it because we're talking about what does it mean to speak out and just what does it mean to have a collective, to get it involved in a collective project, and what does it mean to create also. But as a creator, you somehow you have a voice,
Maybe my collaborators can talk about.
Do you want to say something about this?
Voice. No.
Okay.
Maybe. What is your definition of a curator? Yes,
it's very large.
It's very open, no? It's not just exhibition maker. It's
definitely not.
Definitely, it's not just that.
No. In the last couple of days, I found myself in very different positions. But I remember that you were talking about the term when we met. A couple of weeks ago, and I was thinking today that I never thought that I could describe myself, I could find a word to describe myself. It's really hard to just choose one word to represent what you do or what you are. But this word is encompassing a lot of different qualities.
Yeah, it's unrolling everything.
Yeah, and I think that in different scenarios, you have to build trust, you have to communicate, you have to compromise, you have to make things, you have to facilitate, mediate, but also you have to be human, because the people around you need you at the human level.
Talking about human level, I don't know, just how to step to something else. Let's talk about Anafi, maybe. Let's do the loop, because we're starting to saying that you're leaving at the end of this week.
On Thursday
to Anafi. Maybe you can just say a few little words about this project you are involved in.
Yes, I'm working for Phenomenon.
So what is Phenomenon?
Phenomenon is contemporary art project that happens every 2 years in the island of Anafi. It's organized by two collectors that are based in Paris. And it's a residency program that includes a series of performances, video screenings, public programming basically on the island in indoor or outdoor spaces, and also an exhibition that is the outcome of the artist's research on the concept of each year, of each exhibition, let's say.
What is the concept of this year?
It's the role of art in times of political of crisis, more broadly. But it was very interesting to work on something that is actually just 2 weeks that they're going to be there, but how they develop their thoughts and research and ideas of the space before, and how this will probably change when we're going to be there.
So it's like a workshop.
Kind of.
Like 2 weeks workshop.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have a mandatory presence, but a lot of things are going to happen by different artists, and some more collectively.
Maybe just to precise for everybody, like Anafi is a small island.
Anafi is a very small island.
Close to Crete?
No, close to Santorini.
Close to Santorini.
It's 9 to 12 hours by boat.
Yes.
And I can list you all the boats that exist. Because we've been having a lot of trouble this year. I know.
She did it.
We did it. Yes, we know that. But the most important thing is how the project tries to respect the people that live there, and the smaller interventions that are happening have to be embraced by the locals. Otherwise, it's
of course.
It's been a long process of building a relationship of trust and communication with them over the years. I wasn't working, of course, in the past, but I can see that now. We went there during Easter. I'm in touch with them almost every day on the phone. We have these big issues with the boat because they are left without transport, without...
So far away from everything.
Without any notes. And it's also an interesting in terms of history, because it's one of the islands that collectors were sent to live there in the past.
So it's, at some point, it's kind of activation of your main question, like how to live or to work together, no? Because you have to build this community and try to, yeah, as a...
Follow their pace, adapt to the situation.
Yeah, the habitants have to accept you. Okay?
Yes.
You will not betray anyone, maybe telling us who's coming to Anafi, like artists, who did you invite this year, right, for this biennial third edition?
10 artists.
10 artists, yeah.
I hope I'm not going to forget anyone.
It's okay.
That would be shameful. Eva Barto.
From France, yeah.
Dennis Palomiko from Cyprus, Patrick Bruno from Greece, Deimantas Mergebridius from Lithuania, Eileen Miles, poet from New York, Jürgen Lempert, photographer based in Hamburg, Jason
Dodge,
David Horvitz, Florence Hume, Vittorio Santoro. I think that's it.
Yeah. Great. I mean, it sounds exciting.
But you're going to be there, so you will experience firsthand.
Yeah, the first time actually. Maybe we can just skip to.
I want to make a question though.
Yes, go. Yes, definitely.
You asked me before about the term of the creator, yeah. And you are artists.
Yes.
So. What do you expect from a curator?
Sounds like nothing. I mean, I don't know.
He doesn't know.
Well, actually, I mean, inviting a curator, I was at one point expecting this kind of questions, like, I just, it's been like claiming back something, so.
I don't know. You can expect a lot of things. Depends. It's an encounter also. You meet someone, and as every kind of like human encounter, it works differently. You know, like you, so I wouldn't have a general answer to your question, but I mean, at least I do expect a sensible and smart kind of collaboration. You know. Like and sharing, you know, common experiences. I guess if you try to, I mean, when it did succeed for me, at least in the past, that was the case.
Yeah. So someone able to give a sense to your work that you didn't imagine or you didn't see. Someone is able to see more than you see, and. Put your work in another
perspective
and correlation with art history and the work of other artists and making links where no one else could see it. And because not just by formal correlation, but also by process and by meanings. Someone who's able to read beyond the surface, someone like this.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a good question. Maybe I will finish by this before maybe asking the audience if you do have questions. But you said once something that I noted, which is quite. Quite resuming like the whole discussion of tonight. You said like this is important to be able to adjust ourselves to learn how to collaborate in small ways because this is the way we can change things. And I think it was a nice sentence. Thank you very much, Mirto, for tonight.
Thank you for the invite.
You. So, do you have any questions? No one.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Like maybe we give you the good mic, you know.
So I want to hear a little bit more about the document that you talked about, and was it more because I didn't see it yet?
Yeah.
And it sounds very interesting. And does it sound more like a manifesto? Would it? And how would you develop this idea in Athens or?
You will see. You will see.
In
Athens,
dreams about the Olympics. I don't have any particular dreams about this document, but I was struck by the fact of how relevant the statements are today, and what does that mean? That this happened in 1969, so 50 years ago, right? So
right.
50 years ago we have made no change in our practice. That's a bit scary. So I'm interested to invite different people during the residency and delve into this question together. People that are based in Athens or are from Athens, I don't know. And perhaps trying to invite people in that maybe they're practicing abroad and they're initiating different kinds of collectives that are working towards these things and think together. I'm not sure if they would call it a manifesto, they would call it a manifesto for them, and they published other leads of demands later on. You could see the development of the things that they were asking. But it is a kind of, it's a list of statements.
Were they ever considered? I think I'm unheard. Were these demands ever considered from the museum? Was there an answer?
There were a lot of answers. And they were invited to meetings. The most effective outcome for me was the formalization of the union, which happened independently some years later.
But
But they were discussing about the demands in the different correspondence that I was looking at. But it wasn't also very easy for me to find the person in the museum still, you know, alive, or people working, people being part of that group that could talk to me. I didn't have that chance. So I was more, I was only focused on what I could read.
I have a question, like, what about thinking about this manifesto, which is not a manifesto, today in Athens? Like, how, do you think it would be possible to have art workers and artists gathering together and just listing, like the needs and the rights? Yes, I mean, I still believe in this kind of possibility, but I mean, you know as me that it's rare.
I think it's not an easy task, of course, and Athens is a small kind of scene in the sense that most of us kind of know each other and we all kind of intersect and collaborate in different ways. And I'm not sure if that's a positive aspect or something that could prevent us from doing it, but I want to explore that possibility.
Definitely.
And there are some people that, for example, they gathered together some months ago to discuss about the institution of the museum.
Yeah.
So there are people that are talking. So why can't we formalize it a little bit?
Well, let's keep faith in collective initiatives anyway. That's it. So,
other questions?
Yeah,
more
questions? No? You have one?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm curious about your question. I thought it was a good question to artists from a curator.
Yeah.
I often thought about the role of curators in contemporary art. I have a comment that might turn into a question. The comment is that it often feels that curators in contemporary art are creators in similar ways as the artists that they're working with. And that in the natural sciences or history or other disciplines that have museums that have curators, that it's almost a fundamental difference in the function. So if there's a question there, I think it's we will agree with that. Do you think that maybe in a discipline that's creating itself constantly in the act of exhibiting, where perhaps the curators are part of that creation, you think it might even be different to the practice of curators in other fields to the extent that the new word for it?
Yes.
That's an interesting question, because I think that there is a certain kind of creativity in our role. We devise concepts, let's say. Sometimes we are more hands-on and we actually make things. But I cannot see it a negative and a positive, not negative and positive, like black and white. Because I believe that every project, at least to my interest, the projects that I do are collaborative. So in a sense, I am creating them together with others. I'm not so very much interested to install a work in the room as much as in the relationships that I build with my fellow creators or with with the artists that I work with. And that's why most of the projects that they've done here or in Athens or anywhere else, I'm never like the sole curator, because I like this exchange. Perhaps at SNEPTA, when I was doing I was creating twice the residency, there I was called like the curator. But again, I was working with artists that they came here and their work was in progress. And we were meeting every week to discuss, to exchange, to reflect.
Maybe you sound like a whole artist, which I think is great.
Maybe.
It is. Great, so we're going to thank the great artists.
Great.
Thank you, Mito, and thank you, everyone.